Welcome to City Valley Church. Our vision is to be a family, loving Jesus, growing together and reaching Yorkshire and the nations. We hope you are encouraged and hear Jesus speak to you as you listen to this recording.
Have you ever had one of those moments in your life where somebody says something to you or does something that just lands in an unexpected way? Something that might deeply impact you? Something that stuck with you for your life. I had one of those moments when I was 18 years old, sitting on a bus, travelling into Leeds, probably thinking I was pretty cool, wearing a leather jacket, hair down to my shoulders in a classic 1990s centre parting. In fact, I have an artist's impression of what I think I look like. There, this is the before, and we'll come on to the after in a minute. The bus was busy, and there was a seat next to me, probably because I'd been going overboard with Lynx Africa and Brute aftershave. Somebody got on, and they were looking for somewhere to sit, and they saw someone they knew, but there wasn't a seat next to that person. So they said to their friend, "Why don't you go sit over there next to that man?" Meaning me. That was the moment that I remember really vividly. I got a weird sense in my stomach and my heart skipped a beat. It was the first time I'd ever been called a man. And this is one of those moments that just sticks with you. I was 18, so technically I knew I was a man. I was, I'd reached that threshold, but I hadn't accepted that identity. I still felt like a child. So when I was referred to as a man, it was incredibly impactful. You can see on the next picture, that's how it made me feel. It was a moment where my identity was named by someone else, and it landed in a way that, on my own and in my own thinking, I'd never really understood it. So my assumption is that we've all had moments like that. Some positive, some negative, things that have been said or done that have shaped us dramatically. And as we go through today's talk, I want you to remember that feeling as we dig into the parable we're covering. See, the story of the prodigal son is about being lost and found, forgiven and celebrated, but it's also about the identity that God restores to us. And what it means to have an identity named over you that you haven't yet been able to receive for yourself. A truth that perhaps you know in theory, but struggle to live into. A few weeks ago, Lucy spoke to us about the two parables that are before this one in Luke 15, the lost sheep and the lost coin. And today we're going to dig into the final story of this little mini trilogy, really, which is really a retelling of the same story again and again. And Jesus has been building towards this. Kind of message the story of the prodigal son. The context that we're given at the beginning of Luke chapter 15 is that Luke is telling us that Jesus is spending time with sinners, like tax collectors, people with disreputable lives, people the religious establishment had written off. And the Pharisees, the Jewish elite, had seen what Jesus was doing, and they're not happy. They're grumbling and muttering to each other because, in their eyes, the people that Jesus is associating with are the lowest of the low. If they were to have touched one of these people or even been seen associating with them, they would have felt ritually unclean and unable to go into the temple without going through a whole load of rituals. This was very much an us and them sort of culture. The Pharisees saw themselves as the elite. They saw themselves as better than probably most of the Jewish community, let alone the sinners that were being mixed with by Jesus. So Jesus sees this and he responds and speaks directly into that critique that the Pharisees had. And what he does so brilliantly across these three stories, these three parables, is he addresses both the sinners and the Pharisees at the same time. Loosely, really clearly pointed out that the parable of the lost sheep is directed at the sinners, the tax collectors and the disreputables. And the people would have known that a sheep lost in the wilderness is likely to have wandered away from the flock, will eventually realize that it's in trouble and is helpless. That was the sinners. And the shepherd, who is God in this story, goes out to find what is lost and throws a party when he finds that sheep and brings it home. But the lost coin is more subtle. And the Pharisees would have felt the edge of it pretty quickly. You see, the coin is lost inside the house. Not outside in the world, but inside. And the point Jesus is making is simple. You can be present in the house of God. You can even be in a place of importance, like the Pharisees were, and be just as lost as that wandering sheep. And the woman who goes looking for the coin, and again, another archetype for God, who is, interestingly, the only time that God is referred to by Jesus as being a female character, she searches diligently until she finds that coin. And when that coin is found, again, she celebrates. When we come to the story of the prodigal son, we see this story retold in a single parable. See, there are two sons. One is lost outside of the house, and the other is lost inside the house. Both of them have the wrong idea who the father is and what he might expect from them. And this is the heart of Jesus' message. So what we're going to do is we're going to read through the story together, starting in Luke 15, verse 11. So there should be a slide. Jesus continued, "There was a man who had two sons. The younger one said to his father, 'Father, give me my share of the estate.' So he divided his property between them." We're only two sentences in, and Jesus has already landed a bombshell. The younger son is implying, essentially, that he can't wait for his dad to die and pass on his inheritance. I want it now. And in first century Jewish culture, this would have been scandalous, deeply shameful. This action alone could have caused the son to be disowned and shunned by his family and the community and his father. But that isn't the bombshell. The real controversy is that the father agrees to this request and divides his property between the brothers. There's no shame, no disowning, an act of extraordinary countercultural generosity that would have made the listeners lean in and listen and want to hear more. The father's character in this story is already surprising, even before the son has left home. It continues in verse 13. "Not long after that, the younger son got together all he had and set off for a distant country, and there squandered his wealth in wild living. After he had spent everything, there was a severe famine in that whole country, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to a citizen of that country, who sent him to the fields to feed the pigs. He longed to fill his stomach with the pods that the pigs were eating, but no one gave him anything. When he came to his senses, he said, 'How many of my father's hired servants have food to spare? And here I am starving to death. I will set out and go back to my father and say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of your hired servants.' So he went up. So he got up and went to his father." The son knows exactly who he is and what he has done. He's fallen well short of his true self. He knows that he's a disgrace. Someone who's taken everything and squandered it. There's no illusion for him about that. He knows he is not worthy to be considered a son any longer. What he doesn't know, and what he has got completely wrong, is who the father is in this story. He assumes his father will respond the way the world responds. So he rehearses a speech. He works out his best offer. He'll come home not as a son, but as a hired servant, because at least that way he'll get fed. He chooses life over death, even if it means accepting shame as his core identity. I can almost see him walking up that road to the house, rehearsing his speech, saying to himself, do I say I sinned against you and against heaven? Or is it against heaven and against you? Which one's going to land better? It's not just walking home. He thinks he's walking into a negotiation, because that's the only version of his father he can imagine after what he has done. But verse 20 hits the listeners like a freight train. But while he was still off, while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion for him. He ran to his son, threw his arms around him and kissed him. Before we go any further, I want to just explore the context that Jesus is speaking into and how that's different to what we're familiar with in Shipley and in Bradford. Based on the context that Jesus is speaking into, the listeners would probably have associated this story within their own context, within their own community. And their community would have been probably about 150 to 500 people in size. By contrast, Shipley alone, not Saltaire, just Shipley, is 15,000 people. So in size alone, Shipley is about 30 times bigger than some of the biggest towns that and villages that Jesus was speaking into. This means the listeners would consider it as read that everyone in the town would know what the son has done. News like that travels far and wide. Then there is the fact that the culture will have been an honour and shame culture. In these cultures, a person's worth, their core identity, who they are, is framed around their social standing and their family reputation. And the wider social community regulates it. Therefore, the way that he dishonored his father by demanding his inheritance early would be considered as public news. And now that he's lost everything among the Gentiles, which is even worse, and then ends up feeding pigs, the dirtiest animal, it just hammers the depth of his disgrace home even harder. It's multi-layered. He hasn't just messed up, he is the lowest of the low. His shame is not a private family matter, it will have rippled out to the whole community. And the community will likely have incredibly strong feelings about what has happened. The older brother makes that very clear later in the story, but for now, just picture the scene. The son is walking up this road towards the village where his family home is situated. The community sees him coming. They all know what he did. And the son feels the weight of this incredibly, deeply. And the father sees him and runs to him. In that culture, a patriarch, a man of honor, running was not what they did. It meant exposing your ankles, which apparently is really bad. So Matt, you would probably be shunned in that community, just to let you know. It was embarrassing. He was undignified. It was beneath a patriarch. It was not acceptable socially. But the father doesn't care. He runs to his son in full view of the community. And in doing so, he places himself publicly on his son's side. Before anyone else can register their judgment, he throws his arms around him, kisses him. And by the time that anyone else has worked out what is happening, the father has already shown them that this is my son. The welcome from the father is clear to see. The son came home expecting judgment, probably even permanent rejection by the family and the community. And what he received was a father running down the road to meet him. I imagine that this was pretty terrifying for the son. He was likely expecting the father to be stopping him from entering the family estate. But what he received was an embrace of love. The son and everyone in the community was not prepared for this reception. The son had a speech prepared. He wanted to enter as a slave, not as a son. But the father did was an incredible act of grace. And the son tries to get out his little message that is rehearsed. His son said to him, "Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son." He never gets to the second half of his speech. He never says, "Make me like one of your hired servants." The father cuts him off. Because the father was never interested in a transaction. He was never waiting to hear terms. And what the father does next is extraordinary. He gives four more gifts, one after the other. Rapid fire. He says, "Quick, bring the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. Bring the fattened calf and kill it. Let's have a feast and celebrate. For this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found." Each of these gifts is incredibly significant. There are five gifts given in total. First one is the embrace. And as we've seen, this is already an extravagant, undeserved, and scandalous act from the father. Where the son deserved rejection, the father shows his true character, a loving, devoted father who is full of gut-wrenching compassion, a father who is desperate to welcome his son back into the family. Then he's given a robe. And this robe isn't just clothing, it carries deep meaning. Joseph had a technicolor dream coat. In the story of, in the Old Testament of Jonathan and David before he was king, Jonathan gave David his robe as a sign of a covenant and honor. A robe is clothing that speaks of being worthy to stand in someone's presence, of restored identity. Only members of the family wore robes in the household. The younger brother has just said, "I am no longer worthy to be called your son." And the father's response is to clothe him like a son. As if the last chapter of his life had never happened. Then the father gives him a ring. Many scholars think this would have been a signet ring with a family crest on it. And thinking back again to the Old Testament, when Joseph was made second in command in Egypt, Pharaoh gave him a ring. This ring is not a decoration, it carries authority. It's almost like when the son speaks, it's as if the father has spoken. This is the ring that's being placed on the son's finger. And he's given sandals. Only members of families wore sandals. Servants were barefoot. To be given sandals is to be publicly marked as belonging to the family. Not ostracized, not outside. Wherever the son goes, in the house and out of the house, he is representing the family once more. A public display of belonging. And then the feasts. Killing the fattened calf was a huge deal, like a wedding level celebration. It wasn't just for the family, it was a once a year event. The whole community would have been invited to this feast. The father is making a public declaration to everyone that his son is back, reintegrated into the fabric of the family and the community. The invite is to everyone to see this son as accepted. The father isn't just privately forgiving his son. He is publicly, extravagantly, and at great personal cost, naming him as forgiven, clothing him in his true identity. Not the identity that the son thinks he should have, and certainly not the identity that the community thinks he should have. The father is declaring to everyone who witnessed the shame, "This is my son, and he is back for good." The shame of the son was layered. But the restoration from the father is even more layered. This makes me think back to that bus ride in Leeds. Someone naming an identity over me that I hadn't been able to give myself. One that I struggled to accept. That's what the father's doing here, but with an infinitely greater cost and with infinitely greater love. Here we see the son is fully restored. Not because of what he has done, but because of who his father is. Compassionate, loving, and full of forgiveness. But this isn't the end of the story. Verse 25 continues. Meanwhile, the older son was in the field. When he came near the house, he heard music and dancing. So he called one of the servants and asked him what was going on. Your brother has come, he replied, and your father has killed the fattened calf because he has him back safe and sound. The older brother became angry and refused to go in. So his father went out and pleaded with him. But he answered his father, look, all these years I've been slaving for you and never disobeyed your orders. Yet you've never gave me even a young goat so I could celebrate with my friends. But this son of yours, who has squandered your property with prostitutes, comes home and you kill the fattened calf for him. My son, the father says, you are always with me and everything I have is yours. But we had to celebrate and be glad because this brother of yours was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. Just look at the older son for a moment. He's angry. He's refusing to go in, refusing to be associated with his younger brother who has brought such shame on his family. The older brother says to his father, all these years I've been slaving for you. He's been slaving. The identity the older son is living in is one of slavery. And this mirrors the younger son so eloquently. He was rehearsing his speech on his way home. He was preparing to ask to become a hired servant, a slave in the household. One son ran away and ended up wanting to become a slave. The other son stayed at home and behaved like a slave. Neither of them knows who the father is. Neither son has ever understood or accepted the love of the father. And here's something that a lot of people never notice when they read this parable. And when I noticed it, I was like, oh my days, that's amazing. At the beginning of the story, when the younger son asks for his share of the estate, the father divides the property between both sons. In Jewish inheritance law, the older son receives a double portion. So whatever the younger son received, the older son received twice as much. The estate is already his. The father is still around, but the older son is already the primary heir. In many ways, he's the father's partner, looking after everything they have together once the younger son had left. Which means that when the older son says, you never gave me even a young goat to celebrate with my friends, he didn't need his father to give him a goat because the goat belonged to him already. In fact, he could have made the decision to kill the fatted calf as easily as the father did. The resources were already his. Everything the father had was already his. He'd never received it. He'd never lived in it. He was so busy keeping score, so invested in the identity of a slave earning his keep, that he couldn't see what was already in his hands. And the father says to him, my son, you are always with me and everything I have is yours. This is another moment like the bus. The father is not offering the son something new. He is saying, you've always been my son. You've always had everything. I have always been yours. But the older son hasn't received it. He's too busy slaving, trying to earn his father's acceptance. And this is probably the most heartbreaking moment in the story. Not the younger son in the pigsty, but the older son standing outside a party being thrown in his own home, unable to walk through the door because he didn't know who he was. At that moment, Jesus is talking directly to the Pharisees in the crowd and saying, this is you. You are the lost coin in the house. You are the older brother who doesn't know who he really is. You follow the rules, you keep the score, you stand outside the party grumbling. And all the while the Father is coming out to you, naming you, telling you that everything he has is yours. The reality is that it's easy to see when we're acting more like the younger son. Much harder to see when we're acting like the older son. And this message from Jesus is timeless. It's for us right now, regardless of where we find ourselves. The reality is that we can be just as lost when we are living and active in a Christian community as we are when we have separated ourselves from God and are in the world, for want of a better phrase. The truth is that we can find our identity in so many things. Money, sex, power, the more obvious ones, but the more hidden ones like service in the church or feelings of self-righteousness. Unless we accept the first gift, the embrace, and continue to accept this every day, we can so easily fall into the trap of thinking that we are in control. The love of God is accepting you no matter where you are or what you have done. The reality is that to really get to a place where you can engage in a celebration, the first thing you have to do is be able to accept the embrace. The embrace is the foundation, the undeserved grace, the compassionate Father reaching you because he loves you and not because you've done anything to earn it or deserve it. The older brother is the Pharisee in the crowd, the coin lost in the house, the religious person so busy keeping on doing the right thing that he can't even step inside a party being thrown in his own home. Jesus names that. Maybe that's your experience of a Christian life. And if so, the next part of the story is for you. The same way that the father ran to the younger son, like the shepherd looking for the lost sheep, the father goes out to the older son, like the woman looking for the lost coin. In this story, each time it's the father who goes to his sons. It's the woman who looks for the coin, and it's the shepherd who looks for the sheep. Neither son earns the pursuit. Neither son deserves the attention, yet the father goes anyway. The thing that strikes me about this story, and I think Jesus is deliberately leaving it out, is that we never see the response of either son. At the end of the story, the younger son is inside at the party with huge celebrations happening around him. He is wearing the gifts and experiencing undeserved restoration. The older son is now outside the party, angry and self-righteous and upset with his father. And the story ends with an invitation. I can almost imagine the younger son sat in that party, feeling awkward, knowing who he is and what he's done, wearing this robe, having a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet, eating at this party. But maybe still rehearsing that servant speech in his head. The story never tells us how the son walked into that identity. Did he receive it? Did he believe it? Did he let it land? What about when the party ended and he needed to get on with his life? Did he act as a restored son in the house? How did that go for him? We just don't know. And the older son, the story ends with the father's invitation hanging in the air. This brother of yours was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. We don't know if the older son goes into the party or stays outside the party. There's a cliffhanger at the end of this parable, and I think it's on purpose because Jesus is looking at the Pharisees and the sinners in the crowd and leaving the same question open to both groups. And this question remains relevant for all of us in this room and leaves the same invitation open. The challenge is that you might think you know who God is, but are you living in the experience of it? When was the last time you were able to sit in the embrace and just accept it? Not because you've done anything good or bad, because the Father loves you and because that's who he is. There's been plenty of times I've been the younger son. I've gone away and I've done things I'm not proud of. And I've come back and been forgiven. And accepting that forgiveness, receiving it and believing it is really hard. And if I'm honest, it's still something I'm working on. Some days I'm better at it than others. But I also see myself as the older son. And I'm standing here. I've spent time preparing this sermon. I've worked hard to bring this message and curate it for you. I could quite easily find myself thinking to myself, oh, God will be pleased with my work here. Surely that makes me a little bit more acceptable to him. If that's what I'm thinking, I've missed the point entirely. It might not be writing a sermon for you. Maybe it's the pressure of being a good parent, getting the kids to school, looking after them in the holidays, keeping the house together, turning up to everything you're supposed to turn up to, wondering if you're doing enough to be pleasing to God in your parenthood. Maybe it's holding it all together at work, getting through the day and achieving your goals. Maybe it's showing up to church week after week, singing the songs, serving on the rota, and wondering somewhere underneath it all whether God actually likes you or just tolerates you. The moment any of our lives become about earning our place, earning God's approval, or earning our seat at the table, we become the older son standing outside the party. And the tragedy is the party is already happening. The Father has already come out to us. Everything he has is already ours. Regardless of how well this sermon goes, and I'll let you guys be the judge of that, the reality is that before I have said a single word to you this morning, I need to know that I am accepted. I am loved. I need to accept the embrace of the Father. I need to know I'm forgiven. I'm wearing the robe. I have authority in Jesus. I have a ring on my finger. I can walk with my head held high, with a metaphorical sandals on my feet. And I can really experience God's celebration of me and who I am. And this is the invitation that every one of us has. Doesn't matter if you've never received Jesus before, or if you've wandered away and you're on your way back, or if you've been here for years working away, trying to earn something that was never for sale. The message is the same. Doesn't matter what you've done or what you haven't done. You are forgiven. You are welcomed in. When the Father sees you, the first thing that happens is he is filled with compassion. He throws his arms around you and kisses you. He welcomes you in and restores you. That identity, loved, forgiven, fully restored, sandals on your feet, and celebrated, is being named over you right now. Not because of what you've done, but because of who the Father is. And the only question left is the same as the question that these sons were left with. Is, will you receive it? So as a response, we're going to move into a time of communion. We're going to look at the bread and the cup and the sacrifice that Jesus made so that this can be true. So that we can walk into this identity forgiven by the sacrifice of Jesus. So that we can be lavished with a fully restored identity. The invitation is to take the first step and feel the embrace of the Father. Not to understand it at a head level, but to receive the identity that is being given to us. And this is probably the hardest part of the journey of faith. To know that regardless of what we have done, whether we're like the lost sheep, having wandered away from the shepherd and living in rebellion to God and his will, or just like the younger son, or if we're lost in the house, like the coin, looking like we're in the right place, but our service is obligation or sacrificial so as to earn the acceptance of the Father. We might feel outside of the party looking in. Whichever one of those two people you can identify with, the response of God is to love us, to embrace us, to tell us that we are his children, and that is where our identity is rooted. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. We pray you have been blessed by this talk today. If you would like to know more about our church, where we meet, or would like to speak with someone from City Valley, please visit our website at cityvalley.org.